Prepare to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams, live on InfoWars.com.
Welcome to Counterthink. This is Mike Adams. You're watching or listening to Counterthink from InfoWars.com, which airs every Sunday at 6 p.m. Today, we have a special episode for you. In-house, in my studio in Austin, Texas, is none other than Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, found at oathkeepers.org. And we're going to talk about America. We're going to talk about history and our future as well. Stuart, thanks for joining me in studio today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Likewise. Appreciate it.
You're a serious guy. People who know you know that you're serious about your beliefs and your plans or your ideas for a free nation. How would you describe yourself to someone who doesn't, perhaps, maybe they don't know your work? I mean, a lot of our audience may not be familiar with you. How would you describe your mission and what you do?
Well, my mission is to fulfill my oath that I took when I was a young paratrooper in the Army. And I swore to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that's why I started Oath Keepers, is to bring together other men who feel the same way with similar backgrounds, military, police, and then first responders. And our real mission is two parts, to reach out to those who are still current serving and encourage them to refuse unlawful orders to defend the Constitution, and also to reach out to those who are prior service and bring them aware of their obligations. They still have an obligation to serve this country.
So do you feel like then a lot of people who are serving in law enforcement in particular are violating their oath?
Well, some do and some don't. And we saw during Katrina a pretty catastrophic failure, an example of many police from all over the country who obeyed blatantly unconstitutional orders to disarm the American people. And that was quite the wake-up call. So when someone says, oh, you know, of course police will do the right thing, that's not always true. So we want to make sure that they do. So we want to make sure they understand what the lines are and then encourage them to adhere to them.
So your organization, though, goes beyond just advocacy.
Absolutely.
for the Second Amendment or the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. You actually train individuals to help respond to crisis, correct?
That's correct. We've had our CPT program running now for 4 years, and we have a new program, the Spartan program, which is designed to put people together in training groups. We want to see more organization. We want to see it done in every state and then down to every county level.
And you've also launched a new program called Spartan Training, I believe.
Right, exactly.
Is that what you were just describing, or is that
yes,
a different
that's
part?
Correct. Yeah, Spartan training groups. So what we want to do, our CPT program stood for Community Preparedness Teams, putting together teams that go out and train the community. But with this, we want to have a more of an organized group that we bring together for training. And they can be other, whether they're in a 3%er group or a Tea Party group or whatever they're in, they don't have to be Oath Keeper members to train with us. We'll train them regardless of who they are.
I see. Okay.
I mean, within the limitations of they must be pro-Constitution, we don't want racists, we don't want communists, we don't want people that are domestic enemies of the Constitution.
So no white supremacists,
no
communists,
right.
No Heil Hitler people.
Right, well, because they're open enemies of the Constitution.
Right.
I mean, I don't like racists anyway, but you know, they're the actual Nazis that the left is trying to say all of us are. Well, there's some real ones. We don't want them. We also don't want the communists or the Antifa knuckleheads.
Now, what you're doing freaks out people on the left who have almost a cult-like belief in government and fear of the people. I mean, leftists
right.
hate citizens. They hate individuals. They love government. But here you are giving power back, essentially, to communities.
Power to the people.
Right, which is what the left claims to want,
right.
But they actually hate that.
Right.
So, but you scare a lot of leftists. I think I've heard they would accuse you of being like a vigilante group.
Right.
Is that, I mean, how would you respond to that?
Well, like, for example, in Ferguson, we guarded residents and also their businesses against arsonists, but arson is deadly force. So we guarded them by being on the rooftops with rifles. That's not vigilanteism. We're not deciding who's guilty and executing them. We're defending within the law. Whether the police do their job, but if some arsonist is going to throw a Molotov cocktail on a building and burn a family to death, we're going to stop them.
We're going to go to a break here. On the other side of this break, I want to ask you about history and the future of our nation. We're in studio with Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers at oathkeepers.org.
Warning. Take the red pill before viewing. Counterthink with Mike Adams.
Welcome back to Counterthink. We're interviewing Stuart Rhodes here in studio in Austin, Texas. He's the founder of Oath Keepers at oathkeepers.org. Now, Stuart, we were getting into how communities can be safer, and in some cases, Oath Keepers members of your group might help assist a community.
Right.
But you were mentioning to me off camera that actually you would like to train communities to defend themselves.
Yeah, precisely. The best outcome in Ferguson would have been if the residents of Ferguson were on the rooftops. And there were some young men, you might have seen the pictures, you know, standing out in front of liquor stores and gas stations and supermarkets with rifles and shotguns protecting the community, which is awesome. But we want to see more of that. We want to see it be better organized. That's the whole point of our Spartan training program. And really the most basic level is a community in a community is the neighborhood watch. Because if you don't have that, you don't have secure homes, and the people in the community you want to go and do their jobs, like police officers, EMTs, firefighters, et cetera, will not be able to go do their jobs if their family's not safe. They'll just stay home.
Well, but someone who doesn't understand the role of citizens in society, which is a lot of people today, might say, what you're talking about, that's the job of the police. The citizens
right.
shouldn't have to do that, that cops are hired to do that job. What would you say?
You never have enough police to do that job. And we've seen that over and over again during natural disasters like in Hurricane Katrina or recently in Florida or in Texas. You have a breakdown in the capacity of the police to go and address whatever's happening. They're overwhelmed. That's how it always goes.
How badly are they really outnumbered, I mean, in society today? Take a city like Los Angeles.
Oh, vastly. Absolutely. I mean, there's you know, order of magnitude more gangbangers, for example, than there are police officers. And we saw that with the L.A. riots. They retreated. So it doesn't make any sense to rely on a select force only. And, of course, the founders understood that not only was that ineffective, it was also dangerous for liberty because now you have a select class of warriors who are the only ones who are armed, and you have the people themselves who are disorganized and potentially even disarmed. Now, we're armed, but we're still disorganized. And so the founders' answer was that we, the people, should be the primary defense system for our neighborhoods, for our towns, for our counties, and for our states as the militia. You know, that's the wicked M word nowadays. There's the N word you can't say, and then there's the M word. We can't talk about the militia. And, of course, we don't mean when we say militia is, you know, Bubba and his dozen buddies who run around and Bubba's, you know, calling himself a colonel or a general or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the people themselves who do train together, who elect their own officers, who run the authority of their county government and the authority of the governor of the state.
This is the people's self-security.
Yeah, like basically. You see in Switzerland or in Israel, for example, where almost everybody has gone through the military and they have their firearms with them and they're part of, they're organic. The people themselves are not separate from the military. It's all integrated, organic.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because if you look at Hollywood, which of course depicts guns in such an absurd way, if you know anything about firearms, you laugh at all the Hollywood movies. I saw a Steven Seagal movie where he was shooting something and it was like a suppressed secret silent shot and the camera panned his rifle, didn't even have a suppressor on it. You know, yeah, I was laughing so hard. But not to rub Steven Seagal the wrong way, but you should put a suppressor on the rifle.
Right.
But Hollywood also says that militia members, it always depicts them as like racist, black-hating rednecks, tobacco-chew-spitting,
right,
you know,
right.
greasy, women-beating, you know, whatever. Like, that's the caricature that we see in Hollywood. It's crazy.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, when the militia movement in the 90s reacted to what they saw at Waco, a lot of the best intentions, but a lot of them were not prior service, and a lot of them did parade around and call themselves general and colonel and things like this. And us veterans looked at them and said, these guys are a bunch of Walter Mitties, and we didn't become involved in it. And so you wound up with this vacuum of actual trained men not taking part in it, and so it got off with a wrong first foot. Best of intentions, but a lot of times they are not competent. And so
right.
we want to see, so that's kind of our purpose with the Spartan training groups, is to raise a standard of training across the board and make sure that they're actually competent, whether they're in a 3%er group, a militia group, neighborhood watch, you know, whatever they're doing.
Uh-huh.
I really don't care what it is. I want the people of the United States, as a pool of people who can be the sheriff's posse, who can be the militia for this state, who can be the neighborhood watch, the church security team, the volunteer security team for the school, whatever it is they may need to do, volunteering on the border, for example, I want them all to be competent. So we don't raise the bar as far as their training.
And so most of your members reflect military training or law enforcement training or some similar form of that. So there's automatically there a history of discipline, of usually firearm safety that's been drilled into them by their Marine sergeant, you know?
Right.
You don't get out of the Marines. I mean, you don't graduate as a Marine if you're a trigger-happy
person. Your fingers in the right position.
Right. Right. Yeah. They'll beat you to a pulp before they let you run around with a rifle that way. So it seems like your group is a lot more disciplined than what many people might associate with vigilante groups.
Right. Well, I mean, I wouldn't call them militia group necessarily, a vigilante group. I would just call them, most of them are untrained volunteers.
Okay.
So, but we do bring a lot of credibility and skill sets and experience. For example, when we went to Berkeley twice in a row and defended against Antifa, I flew in John Kerriman, who was our leader on the rooftops in Missouri. You know, he's a 25-year career law enforcement academy instructor, extremely competent. He was the leader on the ground. And then he was backed up by a dozen other police officers from California. Some current serving and some retired off-duty cops came and helped us out.
So it seems like the local police must be very welcoming of your presence in most cases.
The rank and file, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Now, the higher, it's like in the military, the higher up the officer corps you get, the more likely you are to have politically motivated people who might not like us as much. But
the
rank and file, absolutely. In Berkeley, we got thumbs up and winks and nods from a lot of the rank and file cops. Because they're just like us. We're all very much the same.
That's right. That's right. Now, you studied law, right?
Right.
Do you have a law degree? Or
I went to Yale Law School and graduated, yes.
Okay. So, a legal question then. What about this idea of there's some local chaos, some bad people are trying to set fire to buildings or destroying people's vehicles, maybe with people inside. Your team, your group is there to help stop violence. But aren't they making decisions that would be more appropriate for a courtroom? I mean, if they make the decision to shoot somebody to stop violence, I mean, where do you draw the line in terms of the legal or ethical ramifications of some of their actions?
Well, it's no different than when you're walking around in public and you're facing a potential lethal force threat. You have to decide whether or not it's a real threat, whether it's, you know, whether they have the capacity, whether it's immediate, whether you're actually in fear for your life, and then the steps you have to take, and it has to be reasonable force. It's the same standard. Now, you wouldn't wait to see a court's decision about
That's
whether
right.
or not you're going to draw your gun and defend yourself. Same with us.
Well, but this is often a third-party situation.
Sure.
Where you might be stopping somebody who's threatening someone else. And I understand that even a concealed carry holder usually has the legal right to stop that person.
You do,
as
absolutely.
Well.
You can use lethal force to protect yourself or somebody else.
Yes.
That's
I understand. I understand that. It's just that I think a lot of people who carry concealed, like myself, you usually imagine threats toward yourself.
Right.
You don't often, even in training, you don't play out a lot of scenarios of, hey, here's a third-party person who might be threatened. Now you have to interpret the situation
mm-hmm.
and take action or not take action and deal with the legal consequences.
Right. That's true. And the problem is, though, is that I used to be a concealed carry instructor in Nevada. And a security guard instructor also. I train all the security guards for the hotels. And yes, that's the conventional training wisdom is, oh, don't get involved in third-party disputes because you don't know what's going on. And there's certainly an element of truth to that. But when someone walks into a restaurant and is killing everybody in the restaurant, or someone walks into a school and killing everybody in the school, it's very clear. So there are times when you absolutely should. And I've read articles written by lawyers making fun of people that want to do that and calling them Batman mindset and saying, oh, that's what police are for. Well, the cops never get to the school in time. They never get to any mass shooting in time to stop the mass shooting. Usually the guy kills himself after he's already killed a dozen victims. So if you're already there, it's ridiculous for you. I think it's actually not just ridiculous, but a failure of your duty for you to just go out the back door and let the slaughter happen, let the cops handle it.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think any reasonable person would advocate that. Well
some
again,
do. This is ridiculous.
Right, yeah.
Well, no, not just leftists. I read an article in one of the popular gun magazines by a lawyer who teaches lethal force law saying that you should not intervene, you should let the cops handle it only.
Even if there's a mass shooting happening right
now? Absolutely right, yeah.
That's insane.
Well, that's the self-defense, self-only mindset gone too far. I'm worried about liability, worried about being sued, and so therefore my only obligation is to myself and my family.
I'm worried about running out of ammo. That's my only concern
exactly.
in that scenario.
Well,
we're going to take action. Hey, we got to go to break. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem.
We got to go to break. We'll be right back with more on Counterthink.
Countering the brain-dead propaganda of the status quo. This is Counterthink with Mike Adams, right here on InfoWars.
We're back on Counterthink with Stuart Rhodes from oathkeepers.org. You've got, what, 30,000 plus members?
About 30,000 members.
About 30,000. Yeah. And these are not just cops and former military, but also citizens who have no such experience. Is that right?
Right. They can join as associate members, and our perspective is our job is to train them.
Okay.
You bet.
And so are there training programs that the average person can just join as part of your group?
Yeah, you bet.
In every state, or
that's what we're doing with the Spartan program, is starting those training groups in every state, and then like we're going to break them down. Like here in Texas, it'll be five major zones: Central Texas, North, South, East, West. And our eventual goal is to establish training teams in each one of those zones. And in fact, we're holding a gathering in Texas in the Hill Country at a ranch on October 19th, 20th, and 21st.
3 days.
Yeah. And the whole point is to bring together Texas veterans and other patriots, gun owners in Texas, who are willing to be part of these training groups and are also willing to go down and deploy on the border if needed.
Wow, okay. Okay, and is that information on your website?
It should be. Yes, it is, actually. It's up there now.
Okay, oathkeepers.org.
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah, we're calling it the Gathering for the Texas
Patriots. The Gathering, okay.
For Texas Patriots.
All right, that sounds fun.
And the goal is to have, once again, a trained pool of men who are willing to serve, and we're looking for, hopefully, private financing to go down and do a border operation to secure the ranches on the border against the cartels, against the illegals coming across. And we're hoping that will help Governor Abbott step up and do more on the border to lock it up in Texas.
Yeah, isn't it extraordinary that we live in a country now where the political left literally does not want to protect our border?
Amazing,
it's,
yeah.
It's treasonous.
You've got Antifa recently in D.C. saying no border, no wall, no USA at all.
Yeah.
Which is very telling and also quite true. If they're successful in making no border, and also making sure there's no wall, it's physical or technological, eventually that will lead to no America at all.
That's right.
If you don't have borders, you don't have a country. And that's the trajectory we're on unless we stop it.
Well, why is it that these people who are in support of open borders, how come they can't recognize that they will turn America into what Mexico is or what Venezuela has become? That it's a natural transformation if you go down that road. They want to disarm the people, open the borders, let the illegals vote. I mean, where do you think this ends up? It's like suicide of the American people. Why would they vote for their own suicide?
Well, not voting for their own suicide. They're voting for the destruction of the country they hate. These are people who burn the American flag, who hate the U.S. Constitution, who want to destroy it. They believe the West is inherently racist. They believe the West is inherently imperialist and evil, and they want to destroy it. They're communists. It's the same agenda as the communists had back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
But can't, I mean, I agree with what you just said, but can't they look around and look at the attempts at communism and see the incredible human suffering, the complete lack of civil rights, the totalitarian dictatorships that form out of that? Can't they see that that doesn't work?
A lot of them can't. They're so brainwashed by their communist professors. They believe, actually had, when I was at Yale Law School, there was a girl that was in the school as well from New York who had been a union activist. And I said, hey, look at Stalin. Look at Mao. Look at the failures of communism. And she said that was the fault of the United States, that we had intervened in Russian history, and it was all our fault. Stalin was our fault. So she's a true believer, who, like a religious fanatic,
right,
who will never believe that her religion is false. It must be somebody else's problem.
Well, Kim Jong-un believes the same thing. It's all America's fault. And so,
yeah, exactly.
So does Maduro in Venezuela. He thinks it's all America's fault.
Right.
And so did Castro. Right, it's always America's fault.
Right, it's never their fault. It's
right.
Always somebody. It's always, well, that was, because Stalin was, or they'll say, well, Stalin was a failure, but you know, the idea is still awesome. You know, it's a noble idea, communism. It's not a noble idea. Inherent in the Marxist ideology is the dictatorship of the proletariat, a dictatorship, a brutal dictatorship.
That's right.
Which of course never disappears.
And aren't they expressing that failed authoritarian philosophy right now with even online censorship? The tech giants are acting out a Marxist, fascist type of philosophy right now.
Purge.
A purge,
yes.
Right, of conservative content.
Yep.
That if that is echoed throughout the culture, that would be a kinetic takeover attempt, the communists taking up arms and trying to march on Washington.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate end of the Marxist ideology are ditches filled with dead bodies. So we have now our technological ditches filled with your posts or your videos or your statements online or your meme that you post, they're all laying in the bottom of that ditch right now.
And actually, these radical leftists today, it actually is becoming more mainstream leftism, is to call for the complete murder and execution of their political opponents. It's no longer just some theory from history. This is what they're talking about right now today. They want you dead. They want Trump murdered. They want gun owners shot in the back of the head lying in ditches.
Yeah.
They talk about it.
Well, you need to have Antifa on the streets going right up to the edge of using deadly force, or even hitting people in the head with bike locks, which is actually deadly force.
Yeah.
So they're already acting out and edging themselves towards a kinetic fulfillment of that exact philosophy in the streets.
Do you think there is a de-escalation that could happen, or is this going to march toward more and more escalation to the point where radical leftists start shooting cops and patriots and Trump supporters and gun owners, and then we're in a full-on civil war?
It's a possible de-escalation. I think the walk-away movement is important. I think it's really important for people to start stepping away from their TVs. I mean, the duality and the conflict that we're being pushed into, we're being manipulated to kill each other, basically. We know the globalists are behind doing that to us. So one answer is in your local community to just, you know, face-to-face interaction oftentimes can dial back that kind of rhetoric. But the problem is with Antifa, it becomes more and more difficult to do that because now in order to even have a peaceful rally, you have to have men out there armed and also unarmed ready to fight to defend against them. And of course, then they point to you and call you brown shirts, etc. So it tends to amp things up. But I think it is important for us to try to walk the fine line of securing an event effectively, but not going across and starting to attack them and beat them in the street, because all that does is confirm in their own heads that we're out to kill them all.
Is it possible, you have a lot of focus on border security, which I really admire, is it possible that if there is a civil war breaking out in the United States, that perceived weakness or chaos domestically could cause a huge surge in the number of border crossers?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if it was an actual shooting civil war, I think no one from Mexico or Central America would want to come into the United States.
Really? You think they'd stay
away?
Well,
I mean, the cartels would still be coming in. But I think people who migrate here for work would not want to come in during that time.
I see. Yeah. But they're used to dodging gunfire from their own cartels. It's not unusual to them, right?
Right. I mean, it's hard to say, but I mean, if I were, I mean, I wouldn't want to immigrate to a country in the middle of a bloody civil war, would you? Probably not.
No, but I'm willing to defend my country in the middle of a civil war.
Oh, absolutely, of course, right. No, but as far as, you know, whether we get a surge of them, I don't think so. What's going on is the left is trying to, just as it's going on in Europe with being a mass migration of Muslims, they're trying to bring in a cultural change that overwhelms the ability to assimilate. That's what they're doing. So I don't think the people that are migrating here necessarily have that same agenda. Some do. Some are radicalized. But the most radical ones are the ones who are born here. Runs around, you know, most of the ones in the brown berets of La Raza and La Mecca tend to be American born Hispanics who are being radicalized by the communist left
in California universities, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems right. Like some of those universities are almost like domestic terrorism training hubs.
Well, they are. There's no almost about it. I mean, they're pushing Marxism. I mean, the core ideology of Marxism, as I said, is to overthrow capitalism, overthrow the West,
yeah,
and to institute the dictatorship of the proletariat. It's part of the program. So when you have a Marxist professor, of course that's his agenda.
Well, that's quite a statement. Now, we're going to go to a break, and we'll come back and continue this discussion, Stuart. This is fascinating. Oathkeepers.org is the website, folks. Check it out. We'll be back after this break with more.
Exposing the corporate media assault on your reality. It's Counterthink with Mike Adams.
So, Stuart, if we've talked about the potential for civil war in America here in the last few segments. And again, I want to thank you for coming in studio. I know you've traveled from Montana, right?
You bet.
To be here.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. I'm concerned about the collapse of America's ability to project its own national defense. If there is civil strife and even perhaps civil war, doesn't that invite other foreign powers to potentially exploit a weakness? And engage in maybe plans they've had on the books for destroying America or overrunning America or causing additional chaos?
Yeah, I think China in particular would be tempted. And of course, you'd wind up with many domestic enemies of the Constitution more than happy to open the doors. I mean, California is pretty much already right there. You know, they would welcome China's intervention on their side. And of course, the Chinese would not go away.
But again, just to clarify,
they'd be invited in.
You're talking about just the left coast of
right.
California. There's a lot of California, rural California, that's very much pro-patriot.
Yeah. No, I meant the California government.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Like, I still have family in California. I was born in California.
Yes.
And absolutely, it's about 40-60 now. It's about 40% conservative still. So, but I think the leftists in California would invite foreign intervention on their side. Absolutely.
So you think that Governor Brown would, what, refuse to defend California, invite the Chinese to come in and have a beachhead
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, I think so. I think he would, frankly. I mean, if a civil war broke out and there was fighting between conservatives and leftists in California,
yeah.
And then it spread nationwide, yes, I think so.
Well, you think the Chinese government might say, hey, Jerry Brown, we'll help you defend your state against the
yes.
the Nazis, they called them.
Right.
And he would say yes, and Chinese troops start coming off troop transports?
It's possible.
Whoa.
It's happened around the world, right? Foreign powers always intervene in domestic disputes, you know, for their own ends. And of course, they're invited in to help, you know, quote unquote help.
Right.
And then they never go away.
Well, what about United Nations peacekeepers?
There you go. Yeah. which you know, frankly, throw me in that briar patch. You know, if you were to have blue helmets show up supposedly to stop the racist Nazis from killing innocent people in the United States, that's how they would portray it. I think you'd wind up with a mass of Americans who would be out hunting for blue helmets.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
The fence sitters would jump off the fence.
Well, it seems to me it's pretty easy, though, for them to shape public opinion right now, the globalists. I mean, and they could stage false flag attacks on their own groups pretty
right.
effectively. And then they could have people like Obama, who is still running a lot of the deep state, as you probably know.
Right.
Obama called for United Nations intervention in America and tried to depose the president and then call for the arrests of all gun owners. I mean, that's not far-fetched anymore.
Right. Well, the problem is that now the lack of goodwill and the multiple examples we have seen of, you know, I would call them false flags or political false flags and demonization, what that has done has made it very clear to us what their agenda is, and we wouldn't buy into it. So half the country might, half the country would not. It's like on gun control. You know, I think it was Daniel Greenfield that wrote a pretty good piece recently about that. He said, You can ban something like child pornography if the entire country agrees, you know, with about a few outliers here and there, but the consensus is that it's an evil thing that must be banned. He said with firearms, only half the country thinks that. The other half believes that this is part of our fundamental way of life and a fundamental right, and we're not going to give them up. So it's much like prohibition of alcohol. It's a spectacular failure, and it would never be a success. But the difference is with firearms, it would lead to a civil war. But there's no way they're going to be able to, no matter how they manipulate things, false flag, whatever they want to do, they're never going to convince us that we are evil. We know we're not.
Right. All right, let me throw another scenario at you. According to media reports, who knows if it's true, but there are Hezbollah sleeper cells positioned all over America, ready to be activated. And in my analysis, which may or may not be accurate, it seems like the easiest targets for those groups would be power substations or nuclear power facilities and unleashed nuclear accidents and so on. Mm-hmm. What would be an Oath Keeper's response to, say, a coordinated sleeper cell activation, bombing substations, grid down scenario, followed by the obvious chaos? What would Oath Keepers do if that happened?
Well, what we're doing now is hopefully we can provide the antidote to it in advance, and that is that neighborhood watch, the sheriff's posse, and the county security force that can be the county militia. So already organized and trained in advance, that's our goal. So that when that happens, if that happens, the sheriff could instantly deputize all the people in the county who are trained, or even better, already have his own sheriff's posse. I think Sheriff Arpaio's example of a 3,000-man posse is the way to go. So if we do that in advance, if they start hitting substations or whatever, then that local posse already organized can go and guard the substations.
Okay.
But if it's not organized, now you got a problem.
Right, right. Well, then it just becomes group by group or neighborhood by neighborhood, and you're probably dealing with criminal gangs trying to loot in neighborhoods and so on.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You will wind up on your front line with a shotgun with your neighbors doing your best to protect your community when that time comes. Why not get organized in advance so you're not doing it ad hoc without knowing each other, not coordinating, not training.
Good point.
So you're going to wind up doing it anyway. So why not do it in advance now?
Well, what about people who live in cities who tend to be mostly liberal and they're anti-gun and they're actually against preparedness? They don't live in a prepared way.
SOL.
Well, to them that means solar.
Right.
I don't know what that means. Right. So what happens then?
Well, I wouldn't want to be in the city. That's why I don't live in a city.
Yeah, I don't either for the same reason. But they're on the 19th floor of a luxury apartment condo. The water stops working. The power is down.
Yeah.
And 911 doesn't work.
It's like 28 days later.
The zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just not tenable, obviously. Right. You know, there's a massive social breakdown, and they go more than 1 week, they're done without food and water. They're done.
So that's a time when you absolutely want to have an Oath Keepers organization that you're part of, right?
Well, I mean, if you're in a city, this is a tough one. You should definitely be organizing neighborhood watches so that you can take care of things. But there's, if you have a bad enough failure of services like you're talking about, an intentional grid shutdown, those cities are not livable. They're just not.
Yeah.
They're artificial. So everything's pumped in artificially, the water, the heat, everything. So you have to get out. You have to have a plan B to get out of the city.
But then even getting out of the city
is hard.
I mean, this is becoming a little bit of a survival type of discussion, but the average person, I mean, you did this in the military, but the average person can't navigate by a compass and a topography map. They can't walk on foot with a rucksack.
Right.
They don't know how to navigate without GPS, and all the roads are going to be roadblocked by probably bad people. So they're stuck.
Right.
As well, as you said. they have no options.
Well, I mean, you can look at, you can, there's a, what was that one book by the guy from Argentina that wrote about preparedness? He talked about, you can get by quite a long time in a city. It has to be pretty bad for the failure to be catastrophic like that. You can still get by, but you're going to have a problem with water. That's going to be your biggest problem.
Well, that's what I think about cities like Phoenix, Arizona, or Los Angeles.
Or Las Vegas.
Well, yeah, you have no power, you have no water.
You're done. Yeah, and that's the extreme temperature, especially in the summertime, they're done.
Right.
Yeah.
And like here in Texas, you know, we can go find water within a few minutes, probably. There's enough ponds around and everything.
Right.
In Phoenix, there are no ponds. There are rivers with no water in them.
Right.
Right. That's half of Arizona and half of California.
Yeah. Well, like I lived in Las Vegas for many years. It's pretty much like a moon station. It's so artificial that without the power, without that flowing water, it's just not livable. You would just die. So if you couldn't get out of it and escape it, you would wind up dead.
So how much are Oath Keepers then also overlapping with preppers?
Quite a bit.
Pretty strong?
Right. Except that my thinking about preppers is they focus too much on being secret squirrels, and they don't have any capacity to actually defend their home because it takes a community to do that. It takes a neighborhood watch to do that. You know, mom and dad, the kids, are not going to be able to secure that house against the local MS-13 gang that goes from house to house to house. They're going to have to eventually, like I said, they will wind up uniting with their neighborhoods because, out of necessity with their neighbors, or they're going to die.
Uh-huh.
So they have no choice. So why not do it in advance? You don't have to tell all your neighbors all your preps, but you can still at least organize a neighborhood watch. And while you're at it, you're shopping for talent, figuring out the guys that are more reliable, more trustworthy, and you can start having different tiers of level of trust and what you plan to do.
That, I mean, it makes perfect sense what you're saying, but also people have encountered neighbors who they think that prepping is a radical extremist activity.
That's why you don't tell them. You organize a neighborhood watch to call the cops, and that way you at least have that covered. And then, like I said, and then through that, you get to know your neighbors, and the ones that are more gunny, you go shooting with them, and you just slowly start talking to them about, hey, look, what happens if the power's out? What happens if it lasts more than 3 or 4 days?
Okay, we've got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Prepare to discard your mental blinders. Counterthink with Mike Adams is now live on InfoWars.com.
In examining what you're talking about overall, I think big picture, your message, it seems to me, is about community.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not a message about guns and survival. Really, it's about community because that's the only way that we have self-reliance and survivability of unexpected events.
Right.
It's about meeting and training and getting to trust real people who are part of your local community.
You bet.
But many people right now are afraid to be associated with any kind of group that has reputation of guns. I mean, there's so much anti-gun propaganda out there. You know, what would you say to people who are considering joining Oath Keepers, but they're not totally sure what it's all about? Is it their kind of group?
Well, everybody lives in a neighborhood. Everyone should see the necessity of a neighborhood watch to at least call the police. Then you can talk to them about CERT, the ability to self-rescue for 72 hours. Even FEMA recognizes you can't get outside help in fast enough. So you have to self-rescue. And so what I would tell them is that it's not just about guns. It's also about, your medical, your water, your radios, your ability to do disaster relief, and your self-rescue. All of that stuff is necessary. And you might have a hurricane. It could be an ice storm, a tornado, an earthquake. It's not just about, bad guys coming to kill you.
Right.
Although they do take advantage of all of those things.
Yeah, exactly. So many people live under the illusion of a civil society. So many people living in America today, that's all they've ever known. They've not lived outside the country. They've never been in the military. They've never seen combat. They've never seen, collapsed countries,
right?
Third world countries. I mean, you want to convert a liberal to a conservative, show them Venezuela for 30 days.
Yeah, there you
know
go.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Instant, boom.
Or send them there.
Or send them there.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Or send them to Cuba for a while.
Right.
But they think that things will stay safe and sane because that's all they've ever known.
Yeah, normalcy bias.
Yeah, so right. What would you say to those people right now?
Well, what can you say? I mean, you can try to point the way. But what I tell people is that, so say for example, if all your neighbors are asleep and they won't wake up, then what you have to do is say, okay, I'm going to at least throw a block party or a big summer bash or whatever you want to throw. And get to know all my neighbors and then find out who has what skill set so that when the time comes, I've got a plan in place how to utilize the talent pool that I have, even if they won't wake up now. And hopefully you'll find 2, 3, 4 of the people that can at least be a leadership core who sorts out a plan for the neighborhood and then stores away the things that they have to have that are hard to improvise, like water purification systems,
right. Radios.
So if your neighbors are just, clueless, but the retired cops and the guys who are in the military, et cetera, in the neighborhood, the guys that are hunters, for example, the retired doctor, nurse, et cetera, you can store away the supplies that doctor might need, and you can have the radios and go to the guys and say, okay, you wouldn't listen to me before, but now here's a radio, you got first watch. You and Joe are your first watch. So you want to at least have a leadership core and a plan, and then, like I said, store away the things that you're going to need that are difficult to improvise. Imagine what you would want to parachute in a grid down situation, and go ahead and store that in advance.
What about the people in the neighborhood who are so opposed to it that they would then try to loot your stuff? How do you weed out those people from even knowing that you're talking about preparedness or survival?
Well, that's why you use a vanilla neighborhood watch, and almost every police department has a neighborhood watch program. I would start with that first, and throw the block party, start a neighborhood watch, and then ease into it like CERT. Hey, And for example, if you go and join a local volunteer fire department or search and rescue, now you can approach them not as an Oath Keeper or a Patriot militia guy. You approach them as the local volunteer firefighter, or local EMT or whatever, and you can say, I'm concerned about, the ability for us to weather a storm, a tornado, ice storm, hurricane, and you start talking to them along the lines they can understand. You don't tell them you've got, a year's supply of food. You just say, hey, let's make sure that we're squared away for self-rescue under CERT. Start a CERT team, get some CERT training in here, do a neighborhood watch, etc. Very vanilla. Let's talk about, layers of trust and layers of information.
And isn't it interesting that the federal government itself is a massive prepper?
Right.
The government has, underground tunnels and storage caves.
For itself,
caves.
Not for us,
for
though.
Itself,
yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And so it's funny because I remember during the Obama administration, people who were preppers were called anti-government, when in fact they were doing exactly what the government does, which is preparing for unexpected events.
Right.
So how can you be anti-government when you're doing what they're doing just on a local scale? But it's like the government says, for itself, it's got like a 10-year underground city plan.
Right.
But for the public, it says, 72 hours is enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Really? 3 days?
Well, that's why. So the neighborhood watch is there primarily to protect your home. When it comes to community, like food distribution, I would use the church for that. You don't want to be handing out food supplies, even as a charity thing, out of your own home. That's a big mistake.
That's a bad idea,
right.
Yeah.
But you can do it out of your church. So that neighborhood watch combined with the church security team protects the church, and that church can be the distribution point for the food charity and aid, which it should be already anyway. I mean, a church should be like the LDS church. They should have a storeroom full of food.
That reminds me, you know the author named Joe Nobody? Mm-hmm. Ever heard of him?
Yeah.
So.
SF vet?
Huh?
I believe he's a Special Forces veteran.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. He never told me that. But I asked him, I said, if you were a bad guy in a collapse and you were trying to take over somebody's home, how exactly would you do it? And he said, oh, it's very simple. I'd send a child up to your front door to ask for food.
Yeah.
The minute you open your door, I take you out from 400 yards.
Yeah, snipe you. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't want to be a food distribution center because you're exposed.
Right. That's what you do at the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the community hall, the Grange Hall, whatever. But it's under armed protection from the, you got to have your community defense force. And we had to counter snipers like that. It's back to that neighborhood watch with teeth.
Right.
If you're actively patrolling, he's not going to be able to do that because he'll be worried about being killed.
Yeah. Well, but you got to have really well-trained people.
You do.
I mean, military experience typically.
Yeah.
To be counter snipers, especially, you know, nighttime. But then again, do you think that maybe bad guys aren't as disciplined and aren't as well-trained as military guys?
For the most part. Yeah, you can get some rogue guys that are. But, you know, once again, it's the same answer, though. You need to have a community defense force, you know, but preferably people that are competent and trained in tracking.
Uh-huh.
And you track that guy down. You know, if he's actually out there sniping people, you hunt him down.
Right.
And of course, if he knows he's being hunted, he'll find someplace else to go play.
Yeah,
he's not going to stay right there and battle it out with counter snipers and hunters.
No, that's a suicide wish.
Right.
Wow. I mean, this is all so serious for a lot of people. They're worried about what they're going to order at Starbucks for lunch, you know.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about this stuff.
And most won't, unfortunately, right?
Does that mean many of them won't survive? Or what do you think?
Well, I mean, like I said, they'll wind up having to ad hoc form up some kind of a neighborhood defense force. Eventually, they'll have to.
Yeah.
The secret squirrel prepper model will not work. Eventually, someone's going to figure out that you've got food. So if you don't get together with your neighbors, you're going to be dead, and that's what he's talking about. In a rural community, especially, it's even worse because you're isolated.
Yeah,
you know, isolated farms and ranches are easy to hit. So you must have a reaction force. You must have like in Africa, they, you know, air horns need to go off, a flare needs to go up. You need to be on your ham radio to your neighbors, and then a QRF's got to come in, and the bad guys will have to know they only have, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then they're going to be hunted. So they can't just lay siege to you like you see in his novels and other people's novels where they just wait for, you know, and lay siege. You don't want that. You must make them worry about someone coming up on their six to take them out while they're trying to raid your house.
But it seems like a decent-sized looting force, like 20 to 25 people maybe on motorcycles or something, if they were, you know, evil intent people, they could be very effective for quite some time going from ranch house to ranch house.
Until the ranchers unite, and then they're toast. Yeah, because you know the ingress and egress points, you know your choke points. You can bait them in.
We know the ranges.
Exactly. Right. You could have range flags all along your highway.
We all, I mean, my neighbors. We all know the ranges to the driveway. You know the range to the gate. The range to that tree.
Right.
We all know that stuff.
You know, I would look at the reaction to a lot of the Rhodesian farmers, what they would do for defense of their farms. A lot of good lessons learned there.
What. I'm not familiar with their defense. What?
Well, for example, they would put, like, on the corners of buildings, they would put a thin wooden piece that would stick out. So in order to shoot around that, the guy has to expose himself to shooting. You shoot right through that.
Oh,
so
right.
So you force him to shoot around. That's not, something that's not really cover. And you know it's not cover. He doesn't really know that. And for example. And they would use fences, too. You know, good fences and good lights. You light up everything around you. You blind the attackers.
Yes.
They can't see anything with bright, bright lights. And then you have a flanking force.
Right.
Like, you know, you put your air horn on and your neighbors come as a flanking force.
Wow.
So.
Well, there's a lot to learn. It sounds like your organization has a tremendous amount of knowledge and life experience in some very difficult situations.
Yeah, a lot of our guys have been multiple tours in Afghanistan, Iraq, all over the world, Central America. Absolutely. And also big city cops that have seen it, been there and done that and seen it.
Well, I thank you for taking all this time to spend with me and answer some of my crazy questions.
No sweat. All
right. And for those watching, I would just say check out oathkeepers.org, check out the organization, and if you want to be part of the security of your own community, consider joining Oath Keepers and meeting some really remarkable individuals who can help keep you alive if things go bad, and it looks increasingly like that may be the case. So thanks for watching. This is Mike Adams for Counterthink. The episodes are available on counterthink.com. and Reel.video, and Oath Keepers is at oathkeepers.org.